We're talking today with Dr. Edwin Vieira in Virginia, I believe, and he's a constitutional scholar, he's a monetary expert, and he's going to talk to us today. He's author of Cratchmaker, he's the author of Pieces of Eight, which has been called the most complete study of the U.S. monetary system and the U.S. dollar, and he's a multiple degree holder from Harvard, and you sit at several bars, I believe, and are a Supreme Court bar, et cetera. A highly qualified man. Anyway, let's get started here. Dr. Vieira, to what extent is Cratchmaker a roman à clef, and or a how-to manual, or a textbook, or a blueprint for the future?
Well, other than the last one, the blueprint for the future, difficult to predict, obviously. I would say Cratchmaker falls into the genre of all three. Obviously, there are many elements in the book that can be directly related to situations and activities, even groups and individuals who are operating in the real world. We tended to make that more types, if you will, than kind of hidden references to particular persons, but you can pick out those types pretty easily. In a sense, it's a how-to manual as well, because the ultimate, and a textbook, because the ultimate genesis of this was my experience primarily in trying to educate people about our present monetary system, the Federal Reserve, fiat currency, banking, so forth and so on. And I had discovered fairly early that even in giving basic interest in the subject, it didn't take more than 5 minutes for their eyes to glaze over like that mackerel in the delicatessen ice chest, because central banking and monetary history, and especially the convolutions of law that are connected with it throughout American history, are really soporific. It's the kind of thing where you almost have to feed yourself intellectual amphetamines to want to study it. So the question was, how can this information be brought to a much larger audience? And there I decided to follow the rule of Mary Poppins, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The idea to put this information into what I hope would be an interesting, exciting, whatever word you want to use, semi-fictional story, because most of what is said about the banking system and the legal system and so forth is not fictional at all. It's derived right from the law books or the economics text, if you will. So that while they were reading this story, they would be picking up the basic points. And not only from one side, because if you look through Cratchmaker, both sides are fairly well balanced, at least in the amount of type that's given to them to present their positions. And the idea was that these positions were presented fairly, the intelligent reader would come to a particular conclusion as to which one was who. So it falls into those three. And in a sense, it is a textbook because much of what is said about the banks and the legal system is precisely what I would say if I were giving lecture or course material in a non-fictional setting, a legitimate academic setting. So that was the purpose of it, and I think to a large extent that has been successful in terms of the feedback that I've got from people who have read it.
Mm-hmm. I know it's a sensitive issue sometimes about how many copies an author has sold or printed or whatever. Is there anything you care to comment about that?
Well, we had about 3,000.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they're all sold yet. This is done on I hate to say it's done on a shoestring, but if you don't go through one of the big publishing houses, then your ability to distribute the book is truncated.
Right.
You don't have access to
bookstores,
and of course the advertising budget is going to be relatively small, so forth and so on. So it's been something of a, what's the expression, underground book, if you will. And of course we have internet play for it, but it's the kind of thing that sort of works by word of mouth. And that was the understanding when we started, because we didn't intend to go through a publishing house, because of a large publishing house, really because of the controversial nature of this subject.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not simply a soporific subject, but I mean, once you start talking about reform of the banking system, once you start talking about the bad consequences and who's benefiting from those bad consequences, obviously political controversy raises its head. And at that point, I should think that the establishment publishing houses, if they had ever wanted to look at this, would have run in the opposite direction at high speed.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're getting into some interesting stuff. I want to get back just a little bit to the book for a moment here. Can you just comment a little bit on the background of both authors, you and Vincent Sparando, about education or scholarly achievements or professional or otherwise?
Well, Victor is a professional market trader, stocks, bonds, so forth and so on. Right now he's focusing on trading in commodities, and he's what I would call one of the seminal thinkers in the area. He's written a number of books on his own trading strategies, formulas, I guess you'd call those self-help books for people who want to get into the field. And for years he was known as Trader Vic, not in the sense of the restaurant in New York, but in the sense of what he did. He now operates out of Dallas, Texas. I knew him, or met him, through the foundation called the Committee for Monetary Research and Education, which presentation at Arden House, Columbia University campus up in the north of New York City. And we just ran into each other essentially accidentally there. I didn't know of him because, of course, I come from a different background. My background is originally natural sciences and then law. I was certainly never into work in the market. So that was how we came together, and our interest in the book was exactly what I just suggested. We both recognized that this subject was extremely important, but it certainly didn't have the play that it deserved. So we initially thought that we'd write a little short, I don't know how to describe it, it wouldn't have been even a novel, it would have been almost a short story, and then the thing developed a life of its own. So many elements could be brought in, and needed to be brought in, really, so that someone who didn't have a comprehensive background could get a pretty good outline of what this was all about. And it was something of a lark, I mean, literally. We decided this over the phone, and can we do this? Something along this line. I said, well, let me sit down and write a couple of sample chapters on particular points, and then let's see how we think this will work out. And it just grew from there.
Mm-hmm. How long did the book take?
Well, I guess we started talking about it in 93 or 94, so I would say it took about 5 to 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we weren't working on it full time.
Right.
Something of a hobby.
Did you trade chapters, or how did the collaboration kind of work?
Well, primarily, the material that dealt with the economics and the market side of it, Victor would produce either memos, or in some instances, he would just dictate long discussions about this and send that off to me. And then I was working on all of the other aspects, the legal, historical, and so forth. And the storyline was something that I primarily generated. Because I found, at least as soon as I started into this, I had to become part of the context. You know what I mean? I had to start living this story in my own mind,
mm-hmm.
to see how it would work out and try to think how the characters were going to respond and what they would say and so forth and so on. So a great deal of that had to come, as it were, from me at 11 o'clock at night, when all of a sudden it dawned on me what some character would have said in that situation. I'd run off and type that into the machine. And then on a regular basis, we were exchanging this material back and forth and refining it. So that was essentially the process.
Mm-hmm. There's just this fabulous amount of intellectual content. Was that organized by plot, or did you have an overview, or did it kind of just work out as the story developed?
Well, I think there were some basic points that had to be brought out. The working of the Federal Reserve System, the consequences of this, the origin of it, what might be done to reform it, both in terms of the principles of reform and then the practical steps that could be taken. So you, essentially had that laid out, these six or eight or ten elements that had to be in the story. Then the problem was to generate a mechanism, the fictional mechanism, by which the big event occurred, which was the crash of the Federal Reserve. See, we had to have this deus ex machina, this event that would cause the whole structure now to be shaken. And, of course, Victor had been thinking of this for years because he was constantly dealing in the market, dealing with the ups and downs of Federal Reserve policy. So he understood perfectly well a number of potential scenarios that could occur if you had certain elements built into it. And then the element that, or that the hinge on which the story turned, of course, is the personal weakness of the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, a man who is driven by his own will or ultimately his appetites or ultimately his vices. And that actually is a thread that runs through the story because it strikes me that's the problem of American society today, both in law and economics, is this element that will is in control and law is not. That we really don't have to respond to some higher level of control that's superior to us. We make our own law, right? We make our own economic system. And that's the great fallacy that trips him up. This fictional chairman of the board, and others. I mean, there are a number of other characters that fall into that same pattern. And then as a result of that, he makes the serious blunder. Now, of course, one could say, well, that's a kind of a fictional story. That wouldn't happen in the real world. No, it might not happen in the real world in the sense that a particular individual in that position would blunder that way for that reason. Okay, that's fine. But it certainly is possible that you could have a blunder or a series of blunders, a series of miscalculations, if you will, within the system that would give you the same result. And we needed to set something up that we could control for the purposes of the story. So that's the way it was done. Simply as somebody, the main character, Dominic Ancona, is not simply responding to something that happens through a blunder of the Federal Reserve. He set this up so that he knows what's coming. And therefore, as a result of that, the whole strategy, political strategy, works out. And we really had to have that because it's a little bit, it's a little bit extreme, I think, to imagine a situation where a series of blunders like that could occur, and then on the other side, people would be ready to respond to them in the way that the characters in this book respond to them. So there's an element of artificiality, but, you know, there's an element of artificiality of that kind throughout life. All sorts of times, particular individuals, particular situations appear that no one could possibly have predicted. But we had to have one where we knew what was happening, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
The authors knew what was happening.
Right.
I don't think it's that far-fetched because of the nature of the kinds of people that you have in politics and the economic world today.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it actually, every day it gets a little closer to headline quality or something.
Well, that's what was interesting about this, sort of a prophetic nature in the book now, not that I wanted it to come out that way, but it's almost, if you read the book at the end, it says, well, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Pick up the newspaper or go to the internet, especially, where you get a little more undoctored news, and you see these elements actually working themselves out.
Mm-hmm.